me a general topic, which would only take about 30 hours to complete, if you want to understand it fully. But he said, because in the month of December, in our movement, we make the effort to focus on distributing Prabhupada's books much more, with much more intensity and effort than we normally do, he asked that I speak something about it to perhaps help us understand the importance and to understand the position it takes in Prabhupada's life and in Prabhupada's movement. And I'll try to relate this to those who are newer to Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada met his spiritual master when he was, I think, 22 or 23 years old. And he had been married for several years. And something very interesting happened, which is kind of like a Bollywood movie, but it's true. Number one, he didn't want to go see him, and a friend of him forced him to go. So it's a good script, right? And then when he goes, he realizes that he's met a very special person. But the most interesting thing that happened was when he met his spiritual master, naturally, because he is a sadhu, his spiritual master is a sadhu, he paid obeisances. So he bowed down, pranams. And when he got up, immediately his spiritual master saw him, he and his friend, and said, "You are educated boys, you should preach this message in English." Quite interesting, right? Very Bollywood, isn't it? It's not normal. You don't even know somebody, and they're already telling you what to do. The implication of the instruction of preaching in English meant English-speaking countries, like England, America, and so forth. And so where did the books come in? Because as you know, Prabhupada wrote many books, and he focused on writing books. So part of that, part of the implication of that instruction was also preaching in English means writing books in English for the English-speaking people. And Prabhupada was with his spiritual master shortly before his spiritual master left, and they were in Radhakund. And Prabhupada was a businessman. So naturally, businessman means he'll have money, and so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, if you get money, you're doing business, if you get money, this is what you do with it. He didn't say build temples, because mostly that's what you think, right? If you get money, build a temple, or do a goshala, maybe an orphanage. What else do you do when you get money in India? I don't know, an ashram, feed people. Said, if you ever get money, print books. Then he said something amazing. He said that they'd built a temple in Calcutta. A big donor built a temple. But once a temple was built, it actually created an internal problem within the organization. It's kind of like, when people become wealthy, there's a whole set of problems that enter that they didn't have before. Are you aware of this? When a country goes from poor to rich, there's a lot of degradation and people start to become depressed that used to be happy because their neighbor now has a bigger car than they have. You know, they didn't even have a car for 20 years. Now they have a car, but their neighbor has a bigger one and they become depressed. You know, these kinds of problems, right? It's called rich people problems. That's what we call in America, you know. Somebody's upset and you tell your child, that's a rich people problem, you know. They're upset that, you know, they're... the $5,000 pair of shoes was sold to Madonna and they couldn't buy them. Now they're depressed. That's a rich people problem, right? So he said that because we built this temple and previously we were living very simple, now the brahmacharis are fighting over their rooms. Which I guess in this temple that doesn't happen to be a problem because there aren't any rooms to fight over. Is that true? Yeah, that solves that problem. Yeah. And then he said, it's better if you... He said, I think it would be better we take all the marble from that temple, knock it up, sell it back to the marble factories, with that money print books. So, what's significant about this is, as Prabhupada said, I noted this. You know, it wasn't, you know, your spiritual master can tell you so many things, kind of whoop, whoop. You know how that works? Or worse, whoop, whoop. Of course, if this being recorded, they won't know what whoop, whoop, whoop is. It means it goes in one ear or out the other, or it doesn't even go in the ear. It goes, it hits the ear, but goes over, ricochets over the head and comes out the other ear. So, you know, like a really good husband, when their wife talks to them, it goes whoop, whoop. Doesn't even get in the ear, right? Ladies, you're lucky if it gets in the ear, but don't expect it to stay. At least it got in. You know, it went through there or something, you know, touched it. But so, you know what I'm saying? You get so many instructions from your spiritual master. But this one, Prabhupada said, I noted. And this kind of became what characterized his preaching mission. And he understood that when his spiritual master said, preach in English, that meant publication of books. He said, I noted this. And that's what Bhakti Siddhanta was doing. So he was dedicated to that. And he was always dedicated to that. Now, I don't know if you know this story, but it's a very nice story. And Prabhupada started his movement in the West, and it wasn't really his intention so much to open temples and ashrams. His intention was to have his books distributed. But people were coming, so they needed temples. And he was very busy maintaining his new disciples, expanding the movement. And if you're a writer, you need peace and quiet. And writers usually go on retreats, and they don't tell anybody where they are. And they put this little message on the email. If you want to talk to me, I will resurface in 3 weeks, 1 month, you know. And if it's an emergency, then you can contact this person. You know, so they have to disappear so they can focus, right? So Prabhupada was able to do that before he came to the West because he was living in Vrindavan, and that was his service. That's where he wrote the Bhagavatam, and he wrote Bhagavad Gita there. But once he started his mission, it was much more difficult. And in fact, at a certain point, he wasn't finding any time. So Prabhupada made a plan, and he told Krishna his plan, and he prayed to Krishna, help me with this plan. And his plan was to sleep 2 hours, and then get up, and then write, because that's the best time to write, because no one's going to call you at 1 a.m. Unless they're in America, they might try. But generally, 1 a.m. till 5, it's pretty quiet. So he wasn't always doing this. He did this because his normal schedule, he would sleep through the night. And then there was no time to write, because he would be in a very little time, not enough time. So he prayed to Krishna, please help me sleep 2 hours. Because this is my main service to my spiritual master. So it shows how important that service is. That you're thinking, well, Prabhupada's spreading this movement all over the world. Isn't that enough? No, the main thing was the books. That's what he considered his main service. So Krishna fulfilled his desire, and he would sleep 2 hours, and then he would write. And then in the afternoon, he would sleep another hour or two, like after lunch. And that became his schedule. And that's how he wrote the books. Then, when I was a young devotee, we were distributing Back to God in magazines, but Prabhupada was telling us about book distribution, but zoop, zoop, zoop. You know, we didn't understand it. We were 19 years old, and, you know, Krishna consciousness was so different for us. You know, a 19-year-old American being a brahmachari, that was like unheard of. You know, that was during the time of the sexual revolution. It was going the opposite way. And no drugs, and you know, so we were just kind of becoming human beings at that point, basically. You know, we were ascending from animal species into the world of Dharma that we had never been exposed to. So we're just starting to become human. So, but Prabhupada, all along, he was talking about book distribution, but we didn't really understand exactly how to do it or how important it was. And if you, and in that time, in fact, he didn't talk a lot about it. Even though that was his main service, he didn't talk a lot about it. He was working on books, it was being transcribed. But as far as the general devotees, he didn't speak a lot about it. But something happened in, I would say, 1971, especially 72 and 73. There was a huge transformation, and devotees started figuring out how to distribute Prabhupada's books, especially Bhagavad Gita, bigger books, because they weren't doing bigger books. And at that point, if you study Prabhupada's correspondence, there's a lot of pushing to distribute books that wasn't done before that, because nobody knew how to do it. Nobody figured it out, and once they figured it out, he started pushing, which meant that it was what he really wanted. But how do you push somebody? You don't push somebody if they can't do it. What's the point? But once they figured out how to do it, then he was pushing, 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 and pushing. And sometimes he'd say whipping. So then gradually, from 72 to 73 to 74, the movement transitioned from a movement that used to go out on the streets and do Sankirtan all day. That's what everyone in the temple did all day, from 11 in the morning till 6, and then from 8 o'clock at night till midnight. That was our schedule, Harinam Sankirtan. And then some magazines were distributed around the party, the Sankirtan party. But then devotees learned how to distribute books, and the movement transitioned into parties of devotees traveling around the country distributing books, and then eventually in airports. And eventually Hare Krishna became a household word in America because of book distribution. And then some devotees, they didn't really know if this was the best thing. And Prabhupada said, my spiritual master told me to do this. He said, basically Prabhupada said, I just trust what he said. I don't know. This is what he wants, so that's what I'm doing. You know, like, don't try to figure if it's going to work or not. This is what we're doing. And then, early on, in Prabhupada's life, when he was publishing books, he was doing magazines, and one friend said, you should do books. He only was doing magazine back to Godhead as a grihasta. And one friend said, do books, because books will last. And then Prabhupada took up that idea. Books, hardbound books. So, one thing you may not know is that when we as Americans came to India, this was the first devotees came in 1970. So, we didn't know anything about India. So you can imagine it was difficult for the Americans to manage in India. Because you know what Indians are like. You're Indian, right? So you could, you know, there's Americans. What does American mean? They have big dollar signs all over their forehead, right? So India is a poor country and the dollar signs come, right? So you understand. So Prabhupada saw, I mean, you know the whole story of Juhu, and you know our lawyers were on Mr. Nair's. We were trying to get a property in Juhu, right? And this man had sold the property to three other people, and because of his connections with the municipality, nobody could get permit to build on it. So they never got their money back, and he was trying to do that with Prabhupada, and so we got a lawyer, right? So guess what? That lawyer was on his side. Did you know that? I don't know how it happened, but our lawyer ended up being on his side. He probably bribed him. So, you know, in America, you're not used to that. You wouldn't expect that. It doesn't. It might happen, but it's pretty rare. You know, it might happen in movies, but in real life, it doesn't normally happen. So Prabhupada was very involved in India because we didn't know how to manage, right? But in America, it was complete opposite because we are Americans. He was completely hands off. He didn't get involved in management. So you're Americans. It's your country. He let us do everything, but he was completely involved in the publication of his books. The paintings, how they were painted, the kind of books, the kind of paper, the covers, everything he was involved with. Because that was his service to his spiritual master. That was his main service. That's why he was so involved. Did you know that? He was really involved with the details. So, that's point number one. This was Prabhupada's main service. And it was obviously his main service because he was constantly translating. And if he wasn't, he would complain that you have to manage the movement because there's so many headaches that are coming to me, and if I have to think about these things, I can't translate. Never said, I can't open new temples. He said, I can't translate. It was always around translating. That was his service. It's too much management, too many headaches, too much this, too much that. It's interfering with my translation. It was clear. That was Prabhupada's service. So, now, I want to tell you a little story about Christmas. You celebrate Christmas in India a little bit? Yeah, and in America it's probably bigger, I would think. Deepak, is it bigger in America, Christmas? It has to be, right? Or you're catching up. But in America, there's Christmas trees lining the streets and Christmas lights. And every mall has Santa Claus. You know about Santa Claus? You've heard of him? Yeah. So, you know, it's more of a thing. And Christmas means snow because it's winter and, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and all that. So it's a big thing. So, in Western countries, people, they become very charitable around Christmas time because that's the mood. It's a religious holiday, Jesus Christ, giving. It's a mood of giving. So, we didn't really realize this as young devotees, but one day, this is a devotee tells a story. He was out on Sankirtan, and they would stay out till 9 o'clock at night, and they would. You don't have these kinds of stores here in India, but there's one store that has everything you need, and it's huge, and there are like car parks for like 1,000 cars. And anything you could possibly want is in that store. You don't have to shop anywhere. How many of you have been to America, Europe? Nobody. Half your life is wasted. You've never seen one of these stores. Yeah, these are the stores that put all the little guys out of business, like Walmart. You know, you've heard of Walmart, right? It's like take 10 streets of India, put a roof on it, and, you know, get rid of all the little shops and just have counters. And that's the store. And everything you need, you just go there and you can park. You actually can park your car in front of the store. Isn't that amazing? And there are plenty of places to park. And the store is clean. And they have price tags on everything. But you have stores. In the malls you have that. It's like the whole mall is one store, right? So that and it's one entrance and one exit, and that's where we would distribute our books. Everyone who went to the store had to go there. And at Christmas time, 5 times the amount of people shop. And especially they all shop the last few days because they put it off for the last few days. They have to buy presents. If you don't buy presents, you're bad. Because someone's going to give you a present and you better give them a present, right? So everyone in the country is shopping, especially those last few days, because they have to get the last few presents. Right? So normally, on a regular day, the devotees would go there about 10 in the morning, and they would stay all day, and they would distribute books in front of the store till about 9 o'clock at night. That was their service. So this night, this one devotee tells a story. He said the store actually was staying open till midnight or 1 o'clock or something. A few days before Christmas, they stay open very late to let all the last-minute shoppers come. And people are very charitable. So he was distributing so many books. He had never distributed so many books. Everybody would take a book and give a donation. And he thought, I can't leave now. So he stayed till 10. He stayed till 11. He said, and then he said, he was, I think, the Sankirtan leader. He said, I have to come back now because everyone's going to be wondering where I am. They're going to be waiting for me, and I have to coordinate everything. And I don't want anyone to wait for me. So he got back to the temple about midnight, and not one Sankirtan devotee had returned yet. Because they were all in the same situation. So they all stayed out till midnight. And he said, that was the first Christmas marathon that we discovered by accident. That's how it started. Because it was a new movement. Nobody knew. So obviously the next few days everybody stayed out late, and then everybody came back, and you know, how many books did you distribute? Like 10 times more than I distribute any other month of the year. I said, oh, okay, then that means this is a good time to focus on distribution of books. So that's how it started. And so devotees would put in more hours. And then the highlight of all of this was these phenomenal scores that you could write on a piece of paper, because this was Los Angeles, and go to Prabhupada's room and say, here are the scores. And so there was no higher pleasure for a devotee than to tell Prabhupada, we distributed thousands and thousands of your books, because that was his mission. Now, something that's very significant is that many of these devotees could have the chance, not many, but some, could have the chance to be in Prabhupada's room or be with him in the garden or be with him on a morning walk, and they would say, I feel closer when I distribute his books. And I'll tell you a story. I don't know if the new people can completely understand this, but I think you can kind of feel it. Yes, feel the mood. So I have a godbrother. I spend a lot of time in Los Angeles, and that's where Prabhupada spent the most time in America, was Los Angeles. So Mumbai is kind of like the Los Angeles of India. There's ocean, and Prabhupada spent so much time here, and Hollywood, Bollywood, everybody thinks they're beautiful and like that, you know, or they're trying to be. It's the same thing, right? So Prabhupada would come every year, he'd stay a long time. So one of my godbrothers, I asked him, are you going to come back after we greet Prabhupada at the airport? Are you going to come back? Because 300 devotees would greet Prabhupada at the airport, and we'd have these big kirtans in the airport. That was before 9/11, so there's no security. So we'd go to the gate. You've probably seen videos. We'd have a big umbrella. We'd put it over Prabhupada's head. And then we'd have flowers and kirtan, like 300 devotees, and then we'd throw flowers at Prabhupada's feet all the way from the gate to the street. And then we'd let the airport worry about the flowers, you know, and worry about the kirtan. Nobody could hear the announcements because, you know, the kirtan. And so one of my godbrothers, I said, are you going back to the temple with all the devotees? And he said, no, I'm going to stay here at the airport and distribute 100 Bhagavad Gitas. And I said, really? And he said, yes. This was before, I saw him at the airport. This was before Prabhupada came, like an hour before. So I was asking him, are you going to go back? He said, no, I'm going to greet Prabhupada. And all I want to do is see him for when he comes. And once I see him, that will be enough inspiration that I can distribute 100 books. And that's what he did. So just because of that connection, that he knew Prabhupada wanted this so much. So he got the power to do that. But I have to tell you another story. This is all ISKCON history. You will never hear from anybody else. Because how can anyone else tell you what I experienced, right? So this is a rare opportunity, right? This is my service for the first 12 years, basically, of my devotional service, was to either distribute books myself or be involved as a Sankirtan leader. That's basically what I did. Even as temple president, that's basically what we did. So, around 1971, we discovered how to distribute big books. We didn't know how to do that. And then gradually devotees were learning. And then we discovered that the best place to distribute them would be in airports, because there's so many people coming and going. And people in airports, they carry money. So we began book distribution in airports. But there would be a limit of how many devotees we would send to the airport, because there are only so many people. So you had to be able to distribute 20 big books every day. And that's, we were selling those books for $5, which $5 means 300, right? 300 rupees, $5. But that was 1973. So that was, you know, like what, five times more, something? Eight times, you know? So it wasn't cheap. And not everybody could do it. So you'd have to do 20 books. Well, you wouldn't get a spot in the airport unless you could just distribute 20 books. And this is, we're talking about people who've never heard of Bhagavad Gita before. Never seen it, never heard of it, had no idea. So you had to be really good. Because how do you sell something to somebody and they don't even know what it is? And it's not even their religion. And at that time, nobody even heard of yoga, meditation, vegetarianism. So it wasn't easy, right? So then there was a lecture, and Prabhupada was stressing book distribution. He said, distribute books, distribute books, distribute books. He said, these books will change the consciousness. They'll change society. Well, it was a very powerful lecture, very heavy, very inspiring. And this was the era when, if you were a top book distributor, 20 books, you could distribute 20 books. And one devotee, he was in that class, and he said, I am going to distribute 108 big books. And he went out that day with that desire. And he stayed out. The devotees went home. He stayed out, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. He's at the airport, Chicago O'Hare Airport. Has anyone ever been to Chicago O'Hare Airport? O'Hare. It's spelled O-H-A-R-E. O, they pronounce it hare. We say O'Hare Krishna Airport. Prabhupada said they should change the name to O'Hare Krishna Airport. That's, I think, the biggest airport, if not one of the biggest airports in America or the world. It's a huge airport. So he stayed out 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. And he showed up at Mangalarti. And he had distributed. He was the first devotee in ISKCON. You're going from 20 big books a day. He distributed 108 big books that day. And it just, nobody could believe it. It was revolutionary. And from that point, 30 big books a day, 40 big books a day, 50. It all started happening. Marathons, 60, 75. One marathon, one devotee did 200 big books. That's $1,000 in those. That would be like going out, distributing books. We're not talking sets and sponsorships. We're talking one book at a time. That'd be like going out, distributing books, and coming back with 2 lakh rupees, one-on-one. Just incredible. No, like distributing for 18 hours a day. So, why were devotees doing this? Because we finally understood in 1973 or 4, we finally understood this was Prabhupada's main service. We did not really understand that. We just didn't get it. We finally understood it, and the whole movement adjusted to it. And everything became book distribution. Now, I think a good message for all of us, because most of you don't live in temples, and that's not your service, and you may not just go out on the street every day, and who wants to go up to people and say, take a book, because they think you're a beggar, right? It's embarrassing. But one thing I can say from personal experience, and I have observed this, and I just observed this 2 days ago with my daughter, because her school, they go out in Mayapur and they distribute books. And I gave her all my lines, time-tested lines. So now she's distributing more books than anybody. So she came back, and she went out the other day, and she came back, and she was so inspired. I said, "How many books?" She said, "I did, well, we just went out for an hour, but I distributed 7 books." I go, "Did you use my lines?" She said, "Yeah, those lines work. Really good, yeah. I told you they work, yeah." She's really inspired, like really, really blissful, really inspired. I've seen this time and time again when someone goes out and don't even sell, but just show people Prabhupada's books, they become inspired. Now, I want to draw your attention to something which Prabhupada has written in the Bhagavatam. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but this is an amazing statement. And Prabhupada said, if you want to be Krishna conscious, if you want to be spiritual, he said, it's very difficult unless you're telling other people about it. Isn't that interesting? Like, you want spiritual life for yourself. He said, it's very difficult to get it unless you're teaching other people, telling other people. Because what you give, you get back. Now I'm going to tell you an interesting story that nobody could ever tell you except me. You are so fortunate. This is a bird's eye view from a Sankirtan devotee's, Sankirtan leader's perspective of some very important principle. Now, I just made the point that what you give, you get. And the Panchatattva has said, the more they distribute the love of God, the more they tasted it themselves. So the more you give, the more you get. So as I'm saying, I would see devotees would somehow or other give people Prabhupada's books in some way or another, and they'd become more inspired in their spiritual life. I'd see this personally. Now, something tragic happened in our movement. And I'll tell you a little bit about it. And my bird's eye view, which makes this point more clear. After Prabhupada left, we had a lot of momentum and the movement grew. 78 it grew, 79 it grew, 1980 it grew. But then it hit a point where you could say some nuts that needed to be tightened were not tightened and the machine started falling apart. And we didn't know they needed to be tightened. And we ran into a situation where book distribution was decreasing. And income was decreasing. And the BBT needed income to produce books. And temples were selling less books, less income, less cash flow. It was a crisis. Now, you're going to find this story strange, but it will give you some insight into what we, as a movement, have done to try to keep it together. So, the devotee who was in charge of the BBT was in charge when Prabhupada was present. He dealt with Prabhupada personally. He understood this was Prabhupada's heart, the BBT. In fact, Prabhupada incorporated the BBT separate from ISKCON because he said, in case there's any problem in ISKCON, I don't want it to affect the BBT. They're two separate corporations. So it was that important to Prabhupada. So he said, we have to do something to fund the BBT. So one devotee discovered, maybe he knew, or he made a discovery, that in the United States at this time, when record companies would produce records, sometimes they would produce hundreds and hundreds of thousands of albums in anticipation that this star was going to sell at least 500,000 or more. And sometimes the album, it just flopped. Or maybe it was a good album and they produced 2 million and they only sold 1 million. So they had these warehouses that would buy these overproduced albums because the record companies couldn't sell them. The stores wouldn't buy them. It's just business. And they would cut out the corner of the album. It was called a cutout. And you could buy those albums in those days. I don't know what they sold for, $10 or something. And you buy these for 25 cents. So a devotee discovered that we could take these albums and go out on Sankirtan. These were just non-devotional music. Baby, I love you. You know, when can I see you again? You know, it's American rock and roll. Why did you leave me? Now I'm crying. When are you coming back? I can't live without you. You know, everything the gopis say about Krishna. But, you know, isn't it? It's the same thing. So, anyway, you know, with the Bollywood movies, you know the whole thing. You know, when I look in your eyes, I feel like I've got my life back. And without you, I'm just like a dead stone in a desert. Something like that, right? So, then this leader of the BBT, he said, this will make money. So the Sankirtan devotees, they know how to sell books. Excuse me, sir, where are you from? Glad to meet you. Nice day. Little book we're selling. It's about being happy. You want to be happy, right? Oh, of course, yeah, great. Take the book, give a donation. I'm just a monk. We're helping people. You know, they became really good salesmen. Because if you weren't like that in America, nobody would take a book. You had to do that. You couldn't say, excuse me, sir, I'm a humble monk. I preach love of God. Get out of my way, you know. It's like, you had to do it. You know what I'm saying? You had to make friends. You had to be cool, you know. Where you're from? Yeah, I have a brother there. You don't have a brother there. You just say that. Make him feel good. You know, this is the movie Gandhi? Everybody said, yeah, well, this is the book right here, you know. You'd have to do that, right? So, give them albums. They know what to do, you know. Here, you know, so they were going out with albums, and they'd give people like 5-6 albums, and in people's minds that's like $60, and they just give a donation. So they'd give 20, and then they'd give them a book. But now they were bringing back 3 times more money. Sometimes the people said, "I don't want the book," so they were just selling albums, but bringing back lots of money to the temple, and then that money was going to the BBT, right? So now here's the important point. The bird's eye view of the Sankirtan leader. And I made the point, what you give, you get. Right? You give Krishna, you get Krishna. And I told you that I was seeing this, and I always see this, when people go out and try to give Krishna, and they try to give people Prabhupada's books, they feel very happy. Even if you're a new person to the movement, but you try to share it with someone, you get inspired. So what was happening, as I said, all these albums were, Baby, I Love You. When are we going to meet again? It was all about sex, either explicitly or subtly. And the brahmacharis were completely sexually disturbed from selling these albums because they were giving out information about mundane sexual affairs. And it was coming back. And it was very clear what was happening because I'd never seen them that disturbed before. And they were all complaining to me. Isn't that interesting? Very interesting. See, I told you, only I could tell you that. Who else could tell you that? You had to be right there as a Sankirtan leader, and you had to, you know, really observe this, and that's what I observed. So, it goes back to Prabhupada's point, unless you're teaching other people about Krishna, it's very difficult to be Krishna conscious. So, this is the benefit of trying to give another person spiritual knowledge. So you have Bhagavad Gita, it's such a valuable book. Even you pay for it yourself, even they don't pay for it. Somehow you figure, how can I give them a book? Maybe they'll give you a donation, maybe not. Maybe you can pay for it. Whatever, you benefit so much. So when we talk about giving people Krishna consciousness, we want to help people, but we're also talking about helping ourselves. It's also something we benefit so much from doing. So, I don't know what your program is here, but in many, many temples, they have programs where you can buy books, whatever, you know, like at a discount price. Then you can just pay for them and you can go give them to all your friends and wherever you go, on the bus, on the train, just, you always have a few and you bump into somebody. I was just at the park over here. Well, not over here. That direction. What direction is that? That's north, right? So, Akash Ganga, where Prabhupada used to stay. Right across from there, there's a park. And there was this Baha'i, and he was going around the park talking to everybody about Baha'i. So, and he had his little pamphlets, and, you know, so whatever, you know. You meet people, like, you have some books. here. And then you connect with Prabhupada and you'll feel something special coming from Prabhupada because you're trying. Now, it doesn't matter how many books you distribute. The real thing is you try, you make an effort. And you will feel Prabhupada's reciprocation and pleasure, and you'll feel his smiling glance fall upon you. And so what we've done in ISKCON on these months is we've tried to organize our movement that in the month of December, our focus is primarily on people taking Prabhupada's books. So you can all do that, right? You can all get some books, or you can get some from the temple, go out, sell them, bring the money back, or buy them, or convince somebody to give a donation, distribute to a library. There's so many ways you can do, right? Yes? In America, they have devotees who buy books, and then they put the books in stores, and people can just take them for free. So they have these little racks all over the city, and you go in stores, and there they are. And they have little donation baskets. So people can just take a book, put a donation. But the books are paid for, so it doesn't matter what they give. So in this way, people are getting books. Now, you've probably heard, a lot of you have heard stories about people reading books, Prabhupada's books, and their lives changing. And some of those people found the books in trash cans. Have you heard any of those stories? Somebody finding a book in a trash can? No, it happens. Because in America, okay, I have to tell you a story. You're thinking, why would you find a Bhagavad Gita in a trash can? We would distribute books, and people really didn't know what the book was, as I said, and they're flying on an airplane, and like, I'm not going to read this book. As Americans, they don't read a lot. And a book weighs like a kilo, so whoop, just throw it in the trash can. If they don't know what it is, right? So the book distributor said, Prabhupada, we're distributing these books to all these people, they don't even know what they are, and we're finding them in the trash can. Should we just not give them the books? Prabhupada said, what can you expect? They're killing their babies in their womb and putting them in the trash can. So what can you expect? So we have to. We can't stop. And there are stories of devotees who found magazines and Prabhupada's books in trash cans. Like one devotee tells a story, he was spitting watermelon seeds in a trash can, and I think he saw Bhagavad Gita. Is that true? Who is that? Radhana Swami? Is that Radhana Swami? So Radhana Swami found what? Back to Godhead magazine or Bhagavad Gita? Oh, he met somebody who found Bhagavad Gita when he was spitting watermelon seeds in a trash can in a laundromat. Is that it? In a laundromat. He found Bhagavad Gita, he found? And he read it, and he was chanting for a year before he found any devotees. So, I mean, there are many stories like this. This is not made up. It's true. Right? Yeah, it's true. There are many stories like that. So our idea was better the books, you know, and then we say, you know, but we give these books to people and they don't read them. And then we'd always say, well, better they sit and collect dust on their shelf in their house than collect dust in our godown. Because at least if it's on their shelf, there's a chance it might get read. Now, there's another thing, another phenomenon that's happening in America now. My generation, right? We were the hippie, the alternative generation. So a lot of us got books. And, a lot of us who weren't devotees didn't read them. And so now this other generation, my age and, you know, people from 40, 45, they're much more open-minded than they were when I was young. Like when I was young, a 50-year-old person was extremely conservative. But now what's happening is a lot of 40 and 50-year-old people, they're open to our books, they get them, and they give them to their kids. And they go, I think you'll like this. You know, our parents were, you know, taking us to psychologists because they thought we were crazy because we were reading Bhagavad Gita. And now the parents are giving Bhagavad Gita to their kids. So we meet people on book distribution. We give them a book, they don't read it, they give it to their kids. And I've met devotees. I said, how did you become a devotee? He said, my mother met a devotee on Sankirtan and she thought I would like the book and she gave it to me and I read it and I became a devotee. And one of the leading book distribution ministers, Vaisheshika, he's made a survey, and I don't know if this is 100%, and I don't know if this is true in India, but it's almost 100% true in America. If you ask any devotee, did you read Prabhupada's books before you became devotee? 100%, 99.9, yes. So it's obvious that was the connection of them becoming a devotee. They had Prabhupada's books. It's rare that they just became devotees. So we had this experience, so we would stress, you know, get them out of the go-down. At least they're in a library, they're in somebody's home, they're in somebody's hands, you know, there's potential there. And then the other thing that Prabhupada said, which is really amazing, and it's along these lines, because we were distributing books, and, you know, we knew that most people weren't reading them. They just weren't, they didn't have the interest or the capacity. And the Prabhupada said, it doesn't matter if they read them. He said, the book is a deity because the book is non-different from Krishna. So he said, if they just touch the book, then they've touched the deity and they'll become purified. And he said, even if they read one word, they don't understand it, but they read one word. So, you know, this didn't make sense to us logically. How, what's the use of selling a book if someone just reads one word and puts the book down? The Prabhupada said, no, it's spiritual. And then he said, it's like a time bomb. You know, at some point, when they're ready, they'll read it. So maybe they're not ready now. Maybe, you know what happened in America? I don't know if you're aware how bad it was in America in 2008 when the economy crashed. But it almost completely, I mean, it crashed, but it was caught and by a thin thread. It almost collapsed. And if that economy collapsed, the whole world would collapse, the economy. I mean, it was really bad. No one had ever seen it that bad. And, you know, they did some Band-Aid solutions, right? So it's going to happen again. I'm not a financial analyst, but you don't need a big brain to know it's going to happen again. And eventually, and Prabhupada said it, it's going to collapse. Because he said it, you can't go on indefinitely with this system. It has to collapse at some point. So, you know, someday, maybe our lifetime, maybe tomorrow. I don't know if you're aware. In America in 1929, the economy collapsed. You see pictures of hundreds and hundreds of people lined up to get some soup and bread. They had no work. America was poverty stricken in 1929. So it's a reality. These things happen. So the idea is, when these kinds of things happen, or people go through experiences, life-changing experiences, now all of a sudden they're ready to read the book. And they weren't ready 5 years ago. Now they're ready, and the book's on their shelf. And they go to it, and they read it. And it's Prabhupada's book. It's clear, it's easy to understand. It's coming into cyclic succession. So that's the idea. So that was what was behind our effort to distribute books. Just get the book in someone's hand, get them to take it home. Whether they read it or not, they'll benefit. And they give a donation, and they become purified by giving a donation. Agyata Sukriti, they did devotional service. So that was the idea. So that's the history of book distribution in December, the history of book distribution in general, why we put so much emphasis into it. And I encourage all of you to do something to help in the book distribution effort, whatever it is. If you can't go out directly, you can support someone who goes out. You can buy books, give it to them, or you can cook for them or inspire them or something. And in your own little way, if you can have books wherever you go, just a few, there's always opportunities. And Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. That was just an introduction to the 30-hour seminar on book distribution. But I want to